Welcome back to Canucks Hour here on Sportsnet 650 on NHL. Excuse me. I'm so excited. I can barely get the words out. NHL Free Agency Day. Jamie Dodd and Canucks insider Thomas Drantz here with you. Drantzer, of course, also covers the team at The Athletic. Canucks Hour brought to you by Avenue Machinery. Being a champion takes foresight. Build your company to win for years to come with fuel-efficient and reliable Kubota skid steers, excavators, and loaders from Avenue Machinery. AvenueMachinery.ca. We'll have you covered all day here on 650 with all of the latest Canucks news plus news from around the league. If you're just joining us, Canucks made a couple of NHL signings, signing Curtis Lazar, of course, BC product from Salmon Arm, to a three-year deal worth $1 million per season, and also Ilya Mikheyev to a four-year deal worth $4.75 million per season. Also added some players to the not necessarily to Abbotsford. Dakota Joshua certainly could compete for a spot, but also Wyatt Kalinuk signed to a one-year, two-way deal, and the goaltender. And I had my pronunciation corrected by our resident goalie guru. It is Colin Delia is the goalie.
Delia.
Not Delia. Delia, according to...
It's a big Delia.
Yes, that's right. According to the one and only Craig Ballack. Yes, so Delia. So there you go. Colin Delia has been signed by the Vancouver Canucks as well.
I just want to flag a retweet I just gave to Scott LaRocque, who tweeted this great highlight of Mikheyev beating Connor McDavid in a race for the puck.
Let's go.
And the race for the puck occurs, of course, without the puck, right?
Uh-huh.
At which point, like, it's the perfect clip to illustrate my point that Mikheyev's the fastest player in the league, in brackets, without the puck. Right, like, different story with the puck on his stick, but without the puck, there is no one faster.
There's
tremendous value in that.
So there you go. I mean, we've heard over and over again, speed is highly important to this management group, and they make good on that. Certainly with the Mikheyev signing, I think you could make a case for that as an element of the Curtis Lazar deal as well. But putting the money where their mouth is to a certain extent, reshaping that bottom six and adding speed as an element. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. I just wanted to throw this out to the listeners. What's your reaction so far to what the Canucks have done on free agency day? What do you still want to see them do on free agency day and in the days to come here? 650 again is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And it's pretty interesting. I'm seeing a lot of split opinion come in, right? This one comes in from Saskatchewan Joe, who says, guys, is this not a huge overpay for a guy who has stone hands? What are your thoughts? It feels like a Benning signing. But then this one comes in right before it, unsigned. It says, adding Kuzmenko and Mikheyev gives us a really good-looking top nine. Alvin added speed and scoring in his first off season, but a winger now has to go. And to the question about, is this not a huge overpay for a guy who has stone hands? I'm going to turn the tables a little bit here on you, Drantzer, and point out that your pal at The Athletic, Dom Lucision, and of course we love the Dom Lucision model here on Canucks Hour, sees it as an overpay, but not a drastic overpay. I think he had Mikheyev pegged for roughly $4 million per season, right? So, mm-hmm. Yeah, not a contract where you look at it and you're saying you're getting massive surplus value on it, obviously, but I think relative to free agency, I don't look at it as, oh my goodness, how could they possibly have given him that kind of money? And the one thing I will say...
No, nor do I, by
yeah,
the way.
No, I know. And the one thing I will say also with the comparison to the Jim Benning contracts, and I know, you know, oh man, this is a bottom nine guy and you're giving him term. I understand that. The age is a big difference, and just the overall ability, a big difference here than when you're looking at, you know, the Jay Beagle and the Antoine Roussel type of deal. So I get it. I get the kind of flashbacks to free agency of the past for Canucks fans, but I do see it a little bit differently than those ones.
I sort of have this rule for player valuation, which is like, if you're a master at one end of the ice, you're worth about $3 million. Like if you're a one-way player, but you're an ace, mm-hmm. offensively or defensively, you're worth about $3 million. And that's incorporating, you know, power play and on, right? And then it's like, so you double that, you're $6 million if you're an ace two-way player, and then put another $3 million on top if you're also driving gate revenue. And so that's sort of how I just like a shorthand. It's not a perfect model or anyway. It's just sort of how I look at it. I buy Mikheyev's defensive game, so I'd say $3 million right off the bat there. I think that he's not a complete zero offensively, but I think he's pretty close. So, you know, put that all together, you're looking at about a you know, $500,000 to $1 million overpay in my view. So it goes. I mean, that was the cost of landing him, and they needed speed so badly. One thing Mikhaev will do immediately is change the way that this team can play. We talk a lot about team speed, right? And I talk a lot about how fragile it is, right? If you put one slow guy in and remove one faster guy, it can have this snowball effect on how your entire team plays and the amount of space that everyone gets and the amount of pucks that you win up and down the lineup. Like, it's incredible the amount of impact that just small tweaks your team speed can have. You know, you replace Chiasson, for example, with... Lazar, just as a picking a bottom sort of six guy, and you replace, for example, Tanner Pearson with Mikhaev, assuming that maybe Mikhaev plays with Miller and Besser in that top line role, and the change in just how this team will look when they play will be massive, massive. So, you know, I do sort of think that I think you can make the argument that Mikhaev's overall value to this team will be commensurate with the contract the club gave him. Like, I do think that's actually a straightforward argument to make, but it just makes me a little bit nervous considering the amount of money that they've now committed over 4 years to, you know, to sort of a non-core piece without sending money out. Like, it just feels... Here's I guess, my issue with it, Jamie. Can you summarize in a sentence what you think this team's plan is?
No. And it's interesting because I threw it out there to the listeners at the beginning of the segment, right? What's your reaction? What are you thinking right now? And a lot of it that's coming back is, and I'll just read a couple of them here. This is Ryan in Maple Ridge. He says, I like the players added. Someone has to go, though. Is Miller for Kako still a thing? It's overpay for Mikhaev for sure, but it's not the end of the world. I hope he fits well here. This one comes in from Brandon in Vancouver. The moves so far make me think they've got something lined up for cap space going out. If not, this doesn't fit with what this management has been preaching since they got here. That said, love the speed of the new additions, and I hope people see how good Garland is and his contract value. And there's other ones. This one from Ray in Campbell River. With all the new signings, something has to go, and we're wondering who's going to be the guy going out, but I love what they've done so far. And I think that's really interesting, right? Because I said this earlier this week, one of the reasons there's been so much thirst to talk about the JT Miller situation, right? It's not just, okay, is this guy going to stay, or what prospects are we going to get back? What picks are we going to get back? It's that move, I think a lot of people saw as the move that would tell us what direction this team is going, right? And so when you look at these moves today, it's okay, they're interesting. I like the players, but we're still waiting to understand what the direction is. And I think that is a lot of the feedback we're getting here, right? It just feels like there's still another shoe to fall. It just happens to be a shoe we've been waiting to drop since, you know, February, since January almost. And I think we might have a completely different idea of what these signings mean and what they mean for the team, you know, next week, right? But there is still just that kind of overwhelming sense of, okay, this is interesting. I like these, but how do they fit into the big picture? What is the big picture? What is the actual direction? I think people are very much still waiting to really understand that.
Yeah, me too, right? Count me among them. Like, I just don't understand how the Mikhaev deal fits with where the Canucks are going, with how they're positioned. You know, the 4.75 million committed for the next 3 years is also, you know, money that is removed from the pool effectively that they can use to pay Miller if that's still part of the plan, right? Extend Horvat. It makes everything a little bit tighter without a corresponding move to shed some cap space. And so, you know, how do you upgrade this expensive blue line in the near term when you don't have any, like, it's not like there's someone expiring after this year either, right? Are you really locking in some of these crucial years when Bo Horvat's still in his 20s and, you know, JT Miller's in his early 30s and Pedersen's in his mid 20s and Hughes is at the height of his powers, right? And Demko's not 30 yet. Are you locking some of those years in with this blue line? And that deeply concerns me, Jamie, just because I don't know that this blue line has, as I've been saying for 14 months now, the two-way IQ to get it done, even in a diminished Pacific.
It sounds so ridiculous to, you know, just say these moves make what happens with JT Miller even more important. But I kind of think that, right? Because as you said, we've been talking about it so much that it would be a mistake to lock into this version of the team. And if these signings push you in that direction, I don't necessarily think that they do, but if you end up there, right, with these signings of adding, instead of clearing money for the future, with in fact adding money, pretty significant money as well, at least for Mikheyev, to your books, what are your avenues to improve? What are your avenues to get better, especially on the blue line? It does feel like it just, okay, I, the texts we're getting back are correct, that it feels like something else has to happen, whether it's already lined up, whether they have a certain degree of confidence that they can line something like that up. I mean, we'll see. But if it ends up as same team as last year, but we've added these players, you know, I think it has a chance to be a pretty decent team next year. But is that good enough? And what does that mean for the future? I think that's going to be the ultimate question. This text comes in, and I think it's a fair point. Unsigned, it says, there's definitely more to come. Rutherford said yesterday that the trade market will open up big time after free agency. These guys have a plan. And I think that's a very fair point. There's lots of time left before training camp here, right? The team could still look significantly different than how it finished last season. But again, it just seems to be these moves. I don't want to say pressure, but it adds a little bit of impetus to make some of those moves that give you more flexibility, more space, more assets in the future to really improve this team in the years to come. Because when you're committing cap space, you know, they've talked so much about how they need that cap cushion. And right now they have even less of it than when they entered the day, when they entered the offseason.
Yeah, I just, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot, particularly because I would have written this on Monday probably if I had felt up to it. And, you know, in terms of the patience argument that sort of came out of draft week, right? You know, I think we've seen enough from this management group that I'm very confident that this club is going to be better managed going forward than it has been in the past. Okay? That said, the real question isn't, will Rutherford and Alvin be better than Jim Benning, right? Like, that's well and good. I expect that. I think we've seen enough to say with some confidence that, yes, that'll happen. The real question is, will they be well managed enough to compete with the very best teams in the league, considering that they're starting, you know, from a outside track, right? I mean, they're starting flat from an outside track with some of these other clubs in the NHL. And for me, the jury's still out on that, right? I don't know that we have a decisive answer on that. I think we've seen some good things. I think we've seen some questionable things. For me, the Mikheyev one's kind of on the borderline. I don't really feel like it's a disaster contract or something the club will look back on with regret. But I also don't know how it fits within what this club hopes to accomplish, right? Are you boosting a team that played really well in the latter 60 games of the season for a playoff run? Or are you looking to the future with your moves? Are you like, what are they trying to accomplish? I really am confused by it. And the Mikheyev deal in particular stands out as the deal that confuses me most because of the commitment involved, because there's money committed long-term involved. Like, since taking over this organization and talking constantly about carving out additional cap space, the club is now operating at something like plus $3 million in long-term cap commitments added since Rutherford took over. Like, how does that square? Where does this go? What's the plan to upgrade the blue line? Like, how are you going to change over this roster? Is it just a matter of, you know, renovating the dressing room facilities and bringing in a better development staff and trusting that you can keep the group supported better internally and hoping that that will drive better outcomes with Boudreau at the helm for the full season? Is that the bet? Because if so, I just think it's too big a bet on a blue line that still ranks among the bottom 10 in the league for me. And if there's another shoe to drop, right, then how does a more dramatic retool fit with signing a mid-range forward to this type of contract, right? So I just find it difficult with where we're positioned now. And you know, give it time to settle, right? We'll give it time to see the full picture. This organization's been very cagey with their overall intentions with this roster. They've left themselves the wiggle room, as we've talked about a lot, Jamie, right? Mm-hmm. To go in either direction. But when we see the full picture, will we be able to detect what this club actually wants to accomplish big picture or not? And if the answer is not, you know, that does concern me a bit, because it will feel like a piece of some of what's led the club to this point. And it's not a high point over the course of the past decade.
This text from Kevin in Port Moody says, you can't pass on bringing players just because you haven't been able to move players out. Miller is getting traded. Pearson will be gone. I do understand the perspective of, look, if there's a deal that we think really makes sense, we're gonna take that risk. We're going to roll the dice maybe and hope that we can find a way. If you have a certain level of confidence to find a way to clear some money after the fact, I understand that to a point. I do think, you know, as you said, they have talked so much about creating that cap cushion. It would still be a pretty significant surprise to me if none of that materializes, right? If they don't find a way to move off of any of the long-term money on the and the inefficient contracts that they have on their books. Now, you never know. It takes two teams to make a deal. They haven't been able to do it so far. Who knows what the landscape looks like over the summer? I don't know. But given the amount of priority and the amount of emphasis they have put on that idea, and the way they have followed through on other things that they've put emphasis on, right, which is, you know, signing European free agents and other free agents to bolster their prospect depth, right? They have been able to do those things, adding speed to the bottom six. It would still be pretty surprising if they don't find a way, at least for me, if they don't find a way to clear some salary cap space. But I also understand fans that are getting a little antsy looking at this and saying, hold on, this is not what I was expecting, right? I thought we were going to be trading guys out. I thought we were going to be adding prospects and picks and improving the pipeline and all of that. And instead, you know, you're signing more deals on day one that not everyone is necessarily thrilled about in the long term. I think we do have to let the dust settle, see how it plays out, see how the market develops a little bit here in the days to come. But yeah, it's just another, as much as we do finally have moves to make or moves to talk about that the team has made, it still feels like we're waiting for the real true move that's going to help us understand the future of this team. And that's going to allow us to really frame what we've already seen from this management group. I did want to throw this one past you, and I think I've lost the text because we have so much feedback coming in right now in the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. Here it is. It's from Hanif, who says, will the Canucks do anything with the Michael Ferland contract? And that one's an interesting one to me, because with cap space at such a premium around the league, I do wonder if there's going to be a team that's motivated to go get that deal to put on LTIR and open up a little bit of extra flexibility.
You need to clear cap space to make that type of trade, right? Because you need to take a contract back to make it work. So the Ferland deal, it's really hard to make once the dust settles. It's really, you know, we saw a couple of these types of trades happen, and they happened like 3-4 weeks ago, right? I'm talking about Ben Bishop to Buffalo. I'm talking about Shea Weber to Vegas, right? We've seen these types of deals, but they really needed to happen before. For the most part, it's not impossible to do one in August or in late July, but it's harder, much harder, because more cap space is committed. But those are the types of deals where you take money back, and the real cap benefit that you're giving your trading partner is the money you're taking back, is the contract that they're clearing off of their books. So for the Ferland type maneuver to open up for this team, they need to clear significant cap space first. And I'm going to, you know, as the market dries up, perhaps there's some teams circling back. Circle back season.
We're here.
On some of Vancouver's forwards. Maybe, right? I mean, there's a chance of it. But, you know, I don't know that the Ferland deal, I don't know that they're going to be able to carve out enough cap space with the commitments they've now made to get themselves to that point. And that's too bad, because there's a lot of players on this team that could end up creating a overage penalty for next season should they pan out, right? I mean, you want Vasily Podkolzin to hit his bonuses. You want Andrei Kuzmenko to hit his bonuses, right? You want Nils Höglander to hit his bonuses. Like, you want all three of those players to be no-doubter bonus hitters, because that means they've all had spectacular seasons and the team's probably in a great spot, right? But now, you know, all of them hitting their bonuses would represent, what, $2 million overage? So there's some risk that the club's taking on here as a result. Plus, they can't toll daily space. It's going to make things tight for a group that, you know, has no experience really managing the full season cap. Like, there's no one internally who's really done it before. I'm sure that they're going to be able to figure it out. Central Registry helps. Ryan Johnson got a crash course in it last season. Emily Castonguay is obviously very bright. I'm sure they'll be fine, but it's still worth pointing out and noting and perhaps watching for. We may see the seams of it, and the Furland hold, the fact that they haven't been able to move that deal and probably won't be able to, is going to make all of that higher stakes, more complicated when we get into next season.
This text came in from Andy the Park Ranger. He says, I think Canucks fans, unfortunately, may need to accept that Rutherford and Alvin don't see the defense as a problem. Rutherford has already spoken about this. I don't agree, but I don't necessarily expect a lot of changes to the blue line at this point. And that's something we've talked about on the show before, Drance, right? That, you know, Jim Rutherford has said some positive things. And, you know, we heard the talk about playing with more structure to help the defense out, right, at the end of season media availability. And can you get more out of this group just by making some of those tactical changes? I still don't think they look at it as a finished product, though, right? Like, maybe they're higher on it than a lot of the fans are, and then maybe than you and I are, but I don't think that means they feel really good about it necessarily, right? There's some distance between those two ideas. You can like it a little bit and still want to improve it and still recognize that there's a lot of inefficient money tied up there, and that's kind of my reading of what Rutherford and Alvin has to say. It's not, they don't see it as a disaster. They see it as there's things there they can work with, but also you would sure like to adjust the money and add some talent as well.
Yeah, there's a difference between thinking that there's no short-term upgrade on the free agent market at a price you like and believing that it's a finished product. Like, the club has been very much turning over rocks looking for younger defenders with upside to plug into this group. I think there's a recognition that the blue line group is too expensive. I think they're going to be top five money committed on the blue line, with Nashville sort of pushing them down as a result of the McDonough trade, right? But, you know, there's a recognition that it's an older group, right? That they don't really have an ideal fit on the right side for Quinn Hughes, that they need more talent, more depth, more size, more two-way intelligence. And it's obvious, like, it's obvious to see. So, you know, where I guess I disagree is I think they believe that they can cobble together a playoff capable blue line out of the group they have. And I sort of don't. Like, I think you will be very fortunate to get repeat performances as good as what Myers and Oliver Ekman-Larsson put together last season, right? Those guys played at a very high level for long stretches of the year. And I think the club will be fortunate if they repeat that. Especially as they get older, right? You know, if they're as healthy as they were last season, that would be very fortunate for this club. Quinn Hughes, I think, is always going to be on the up and up. Quinn Hughes is a special player. Don't get me wrong. I think there's some potential in Travis Dermott. I liked what I saw defensively out of Tucker Poolman. I think if Poolman and Dermott's your third pair, you're probably pretty well served. But yeah, I mean, you have to manage Myers and OEL's minutes more stringently if you're going to get a repeat performance from them. And I just look up and down and don't see enough speed, enough offense, enough two-way intelligence to hang with some of the really good transitional teams in the Pacific, like teams like Calgary, Vegas, LA, that can really get up and down.
And this text came in as well, unsigned. It says, Rutherford said on 650 last night that the blue line is an issue. And I think that gets to my point, which is, yeah, he's said some positive things about the defense core, but he's also acknowledged that there needs to be changes, right? So when you hear the positive things, I don't think you should read it as rave reviews and we love what this blue line is going to do in the years to come.
Well, and just recognize how cagey this club is, right? I mean, this is a cagey management group. They leave themselves breadcrumbs to go in either direction. Right. That's how they operate. They are sphinx like in their managing of market intentions. You can basically hear whatever you want from their public commentary, right? And, you know, I don't think that's bad policy, by the way, because I also think there's a high level of honesty, right? Like, I really appreciated Rutherford the other day saying we're not where we'd like to be, right? We're not where we'd like to be. We wanted to clear more cap space. We wanted to be bigger players. And I believe that's genuine, right? I know that there was work being done, conversations being had. You know, as I reported, I think there was a sense of urgency until the market was softer than they'd have liked on a variety of fronts. And so we'll see where we end up. We'll see where this team lands. I do think we're in this awkward stage where, you know, it's hard to definitively grade their overall work because there should be another shoe to drop. But from our current vantage point, I just wonder if too much cash has been committed, and I worry that it's too big a bet on a blue line group that I'm skeptical will hold over the course of 82 this upcoming campaign.
Final segment of the show coming up, special 2-hour edition of Canucks Hour here on Free Agent Frenzy. The Canucks have been active. We'll recap that. Maybe play you back a little bit of Curtis Lazar when he was on the show or on the station earlier with Halford and Brough, and get you the latest happening around the league as well. More to come. It's the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Relations with Sweden have never been better.
Welcome back to Canucks Hour here on Sportsnet 650, final segment of the show. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here with you on Canucks or NHL Free Agency Day. League-wide, teams breaking out the checkbook to ink new players. The Canucks have done a little bit of that, signing Curtis Lazar to a 3-year deal, $1 million per season. Ilya Mikheyev to a 4-year deal, $4.75 million. Also signed Dakota Joshua to an interesting 2-year contract, a guy who could figure as part of the forward depth or maybe in a role on the bottom six for the team as well. Just to get everyone caught up on some moves around the league that have just recently broke, the Philadelphia Flyers both signed Justin Braun, so a reunion there for Braun in Philly, and Nick Deslauriers to a 4-year, $2 million deal. Yeah, 4 years for Nick Deslauriers. So I think I've mentioned it once or twice that just
big
under
Deslauriers
$2 million.
Guy.
No, I'm not
I'm
a
big Deslauriers guy.
You're a big Deslauriers guy?
I am.
Yeah, I mean, I don't also look I understand the attraction to the player, but 4 years is a lot.
We got to be talking Gudbranson, though, 4 times $4 million.
Are you kidding me?
Nope.
Wow.
That's a showstopper.
That is a showstopper. 4x4 for Eric Gudbranson with the Columbus Blue Jackets. Okay, I got to catch my breath here, Drantz. That is we were talking about sticker shock. That's sticker shock for me right there.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, man.
Gudbranson was a really good fit in Calgary, right? Cannot take away from him the fact that he had a tremendous season for one of the best, well, the best defensive team in hockey, frankly, because the only team that allowed fewer goals, right, was the New York Rangers, and that was all Shesterkin. That was a one-man activity as opposed to what Calgary did as a team. So you give him credit for that. Columbus, right, is leaning into a really young rebuild, right? I mean, we're seeing them accumulate a ton of picks. We're seeing them play guys really young in their lineup, right? Both Kent Johnson and Cole Sillinger are going to be on that team this year in their top six. So I'm sure they wanted someone like Gudbranson, right, to look after the kids, play that bodyguard role. And they probably look at it as, well, it's 4 years before we're going to be contending anyway. Almost like the Calgary Derek Engelin contract, right? Mm-hmm. Like the contract you sign as a bridge to your future where you overpay for character because you're not a contender, right? Gudbranson could probably have got, you know, $2 million a year times two from a team with a chance to win the cup, right? Maybe he could have gotten more considering the Josh Manson comp that's out there now. But you get him to a place like Columbus where he can be a character guy, protector for your young players. My guess is that's the idea here, but oh boy.
Woo. Look, Gudbranson, I think, you know, anybody who's covered him, dealt with him, great guy, really easy to like, really easy to root for.
You'll never hear a bad word about Goodbranson.
And I always, hey, get that money, secure the bag, no problem with that whatsoever. That's going to be the shock deal of the day for me. I'm going to be surprised if anything tops that. If you had told me yesterday $16 million total money for Eric Goodbranson, I would not have believed you. And look, you laid it out from Columbus's perspective. I get it. But my goodness, I'm shook, Drance. I'm legit shook here.
I mean, it's another banner first day of free agency from Pat Morris of Newport Sports, who of course represents Bo Horvat. So a little unnerving there. Jan Ruda, by the way, also going to the Penguins, 3 years, $2.75 million. $2.75 million sort of seems to be market price of the day for your 4-5 defenseman, right? With Goodbranson beating that by a wide margin for some reason.
that Jan Ruda, another name that, again, in the alternate reality.
Like Jan Ruda a lot,
the alternate reality where the Canucks had made some moves, opened up some room on the blue line, opened up some cap space. You know, he was there with Labushkin and Brett Kulak for me as names that they should pursue. So it's and that number I would have been pretty happy with too, right? As you said, market value for a player of his caliber there.
Arturi Lehkonen also 5 years times 4.6. Nice little deal for the Colorado Avalanche. He's going to play top 6 minutes for them with Nazem Kadri's presumptive departure from the Avalanche organization, although it's interesting to me that he hasn't signed yet.
Yeah, I don't know, man. If I was the odds maker on where's Kadri signing, I might be moving Colorado up the board right now. And It has a very we're going to find a way to run this back type of feeling to it, doesn't it?
It does for sure. And I want to talk about something that for sure will be the only show in Vancouver to discuss.
Is it JT Miller?
And you know me, I love to be unique. Yeah, JT Miller. Where's my Seagulls at? No, I want to talk about Rob Thomas. So smooth.
All right. Yes,
he's a hot one. Yeah. Okay. Rob Thomas signs 8x8, and it's actually higher than that. It's like eight. It's almost. You know what? He signed the Thomas Hurdle deal.
8.81, right? Something like that.
8.1 something.
Yeah.
So, and this is interesting to me because Rob Thomas has played 104. He's played exactly 4 games fewer in his NHL career than Elias Pettersson has. Okay, but Elias Pettersson has almost 60 more points. Rob Thomas obviously had 77 points this past year, right? Far outproduced Pettersson in that platform year season. Tremendous, tremendous stuff. And he's obviously cleaned up and is now a fixture for the Blues. Rob Thomas is a really good player, special player, one of the best playmaking centermen in hockey. But, you know, he's also not Elias Pettersson, right? Like, I've watched those guys play live a lot. I've probably seen 10 games with both Pettersson and Rob Thomas on the ice. And there is no chance in the world that Rob Thomas has anything like the gravity that Elias Pettersson exerts when he's on the ice. Like, no question about it. I remember sometimes I'd watch Couturier and Barkov play when I worked for Florida in the same game. And people would be like, oh, this Couturier, he's, you know, Selke winner. Like, he's the best defensive center in hockey. And I'd just be like, there is no comparison between these two players. Like, one of these guys is so much better than the other. I feel the same way talking about Rob Thomas versus Pettersson. But this is a really interesting one because we're now building up these 8+ comparables for centermen who Pettersson has far outproduced for his NHL career, right? And what's that market look like 12 months from now? Because 12 months from now is going to be the day that Pettersson is eligible to sign an extension, right? And make no mistake, if he does this upcoming season what he did in the latter half of last year or in the 1920 season, you know, we're talking about a top 15 centerman in the game, like, period, right? We're talking about a guy who could easily be at, you know, 35 plus goals, 80 plus points coming out of next year with all the leverage in the world, plus an $8.8 million qualifying offer due to him, right? This is a really tricky one. Like, I think that the Rob Thomas deal is going to age beautifully for the St. Louis Blues, especially in a couple of years when the cap starts exploding upward, right? But the Pettersson bridge is going to be a really tough one for Vancouver to navigate, particularly in the event that he delivers the way I think he's going to. Like, I have very little doubt that Pettersson's going to have a great season. And when he does, unfortunately, because of how this is structured, the Canucks aren't positioned to benefit from the upside of him hitting because they signed that bridge deal. And, like, there is a world where comps like this for inferior players push that Pettersson contract to a place where things could get awfully dicey for a guy with, you know, just one RFA year remaining before he hits unrestricted free agency. Almost to me, the Rob Thomas deal, like seeing that, portended to me sort of how difficult this Pettersson situation could get over the course of the next 13 to 24 months, and felt to me almost like the most impactful Canucks contract, even more impactful than the Mikhaev one that we'll be debating for years. Like, that Rob Thomas one to me was a portend that this market for centermen is about to heat up in a way no one is prepared for, with significant implications for this core group's window.
Sportsnet 650, final segment of Canucks Hour here on Canucks Free Agency Day. I need to catch my breath after the Eric Gudbranson deal there. Transfer, 4 years, $4 million for Goody. An absolute
whopper. Oh, you
ready?
You ready? I got another one for you.
All right, let's do it.
Elliot Friedman reporting Ben Chiarot 4x4.75.
Woo! Stevie Y, what are you doing, buddy? What are you doing there, pal?
He needs players.
Yeah, but at that price for that player, I don't know about that one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a Ben Chiarot fan, but
no.
So it goes.
Anyway,
I'd way rather have Kulak. Way rather.
Yes, on you're taking the contract,
price included, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no question about it. All right, I did want to make sure everyone got a chance to hear from one of the newest Canucks today. Again, BC product from Salmon Arm, Curtis Lazar signing a 3-year deal. We'll play this back, then we'll get back out in for our final thoughts before we turn you over to Bick and Randeep on the People Show. Here is Curtis Lazar from earlier today with Halford and Brough speaking about how the deal with the Canucks came together.
Yeah, I mean, they expressed a lot of interest just throughout this whole process. Obviously, they're very close to my heart, being a BC boy growing up, cheering them on, you know, every step of the way. And the timing just seemed right. I like the direction the team's going. I feel like there's a need for a player like myself, and I'm looking forward to contributing. And, you know, like I said, I mean, being close to home, that's big. I got a young family, and just the stars aligned perfectly. So I couldn't be more excited.
Okay, this is always the part where we ask you to brag a bit about yourself, and some people aren't comfortable with it, but I want you to brag a bit about yourself and tell the listeners what you're going to bring to the table in Vancouver.
Oh, man. I think the word you're going to have is energy, enthusiasm, and fun. I mean, that's what I'm all about. You know, I'm going to do whatever it takes to win, whether it be, you know, blocking a shot, hitting somebody, whatever I'm called upon doing it. I mean, I can play center and wing, and I'm sure I'll have those discussions down the road. But no, I mean, I've just continued to grow my game each and every year. And I had a slow start in my career, but I'm happy where I am now, and the chance that I can, help get a team, you know, into the playoffs and over that cup. So again, I'm open to suggestions, whatever the coaching staff has in mind, but I'm going to do whatever it takes to win and have some fun doing it along the way with a big old smile on my face.
You mentioned the start to your career, and it was a bit up and down at times. Do you feel like you know who you are as a hockey player now in the NHL?
Absolutely. And I think that's kind of the role that, I just signed to be here in Vancouver. That bottom six guy, I want to have that leadership element where I can kind of take charge of those bottom two lines and okay, here's our job. Let's go out there and let's execute that, shutting down teams, get momentum, killing penalties, whatever it is. You know, I want to be a guy that's looked upon as a ringleader, so to say. I got drafted as a goal scorer out of junior and all that first round stuff. But, every player has a different path, and I was able to translate it into being an effective guy at, the lower ends of the lineup. But they're still extremely valuable. And, I leave it all out there. I pride myself on being a good teammate, and I hope to do that in Vancouver.
Speaking of teammates, what was it like being lined up alongside Patrice Bergeron, working on that center depth position, learning from a guy like that over the last couple of years in Boston?
It was incredible. And, just kind of talk about my career there, going from Buffalo, where I kind of resurrected myself to getting traded to Boston. And, you know, the lessons that I've learned in Boston, being with, you know, inside that dressing room, and, you know, the seasons I had there, those are things that I carry with me. And, you know, I look forward to implementing into another team. It was such a good experience. And I mean, I'm going to miss those guys a lot. I've already, you know, reached out to a lot of them, just kind of thanking them for, you know, teaching me and helping me grow my game. And like you said, I mean, it starts with Bergeron, and, you know, I hope he comes back there, because hopefully I can get him in a couple faceoffs this year.
Curtis, what's the key to being a good penalty killer in the NHL?
Ooh, I mean, nowadays it's all comes down. I mean, most teams are running that 1-3-1 set. You know, you got to be able just to, you know, check efficiently, but, you know, tenaciously as well. And I think, you know, whatever the system entails you to do, I mean, you got to take a lot of pride in it. That's what it comes down to, that will to win. You know, it's going to hurt to win. You got to block those shots, digging on the faceoff, so that, you know, that shaves time off the clock right from the get-go. But all in all, I mean, every player finds their niche, and it's like myself. I mean, I got to find where I fit in here, who I get chemistry with, but I'm looking forward to that challenge.
You know, when we saw the deal come through, we made note of two things. One, it happened right at the start of free agency, so this was a deal that the Canucks obviously put a fair amount of priority on. Two, it's a deal with some term. You've got 3 years on it. So those two things combined, I've got to imagine that played a significant role in you deciding to choose Vancouver, and that they seemed to show that they really wanted you here and made you a priority and gave you some term on that contract.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You look at how the market is this year, and I mean, the salary cap is such a hurdle, I guess you can say, with some teams. And then you throw all those, the unqualified RFAs that we saw this year, and the market was a little stingy, but, to see Vancouver offer me that term, you know, it speaks volume to what they believe in me as a player. And like I said, I mean, the fits, I mean, the stars just align it. It fits well. It's so close to home. I grew up, you know, a diehard Canucks fan. I got tons of photos wearing my old, Canucks memorabilia. And I had a special conversation with my grandpa this morning, too, because we watched a lot of Canuck games growing up. And he's pretty happy to be able to throw on his Canucks gear again as well. So it's a special day for our entire, you know, extended family.
That is new Canucks forward signed to a 3-year, $1 million per season deal by the club, Curtis Lazar. And as you heard there towards the end, from BC, from Salmon Arm, huge Canucks fan growing up. I don't know if we'll get a repeat of the John Tavares sheets with the team on the team logo picture from Curtis Lazar, but obviously thrilling for him and, as he said, his family to join the team. And hey, it's not why you go out and sign a guy, but I never have a problem with adding someone who's really, really amped to join the team and who for someone for whom the team already means something. You know what I mean, Drance?
I mean, you love to hear those stories. You know, the idea of Lazar's dad and grandpa dusting off their Canucks gear, finally being able to root for their favorite team again, right?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, because it takes a lot. You know, you work for a team and you expect your family to support it, but they don't. Not always. And maybe it's different when you play. But you know, so I think that's just great. You just love to hear it. Look, Lazar's a really good player. I think that deal makes a ton of sense for where the Canucks are at. You know, I still struggle to just figure out this club's overall approach. There needs to be another shoe to drop, because I think if the full picture is kind of what we're seeing, with maybe another $1 million depth defender added or another $1 million flyer on one of those secondary market forwards, right? A player like that, I'm going to have a really hard time understanding why the expense to Mikhaev was the play when we live in a world where guys like Colin Blackwell sign at 2x1.2. You know what I mean? It feels like they would have been better off taking a ton of affordable flyers and preserving their flexibility, considering how uncertain the direction they're really tacking in is. Still, at this juncture, with the market open and the free agent frenzy in full swing.
Yeah, just a couple of notes here before we do our final thoughts. First of all, still interesting to me at least that Johnny Gaudreau, Nazem Kadri, John Klingberg, all still out on the market as we near, you know, 3 hours since the negotiating window officially opened. I think a lot of people, I mean, I probably expected Gaudreau to be, you know, officially a member of the New Jersey Devils or something by this point, but all three of those guys still out there. Also of interest for Canucks fans, general manager Patrick Alvin will speak to the media at 2 p.m. You'll be able to hear, of course, live on 650 on the People's Show. And also, I would wager that Patrick Alvin will be a guest on the station at some point, although I can't confirm that right now. So, yeah, I mean, that you got into it a little bit there, Drancer. But I guess the question now is, you know, Curtis Lazar, Ilya Mikheyev, some depth signings. Okay, what's next? What do we expect to be next? What should be next? And I hate to do it, but I do feel like we're just going to go back to, okay, what's the market for JT Miller? And you can expand that to...
Has it changed?
No, but really.
Now that guys are signed?
We're still waiting for that shoe to drop, for that next big domino. And I think it's going to be the case even if we do see a Tanner Pearson or a Connor Garland deal, right? We're still going to be waiting for what's going on with JT Miller. And just, you know, the point about needing to open up cap space... We mentioned Jan Ruda going to the Pittsburgh Penguins, and of course, we're getting texts in saying, hey, they have a logjam. What about John Marino? Marino will be a Canuck now. Hey, it's a possibility, but they need the cap space. They need to open up cap space for that.
That'd be great. John Marino's really good. That'd be great.
I like John Marino. I think it would be really interesting, but you need to have some other dominoes fall before you get into anything like that.
Well, and I think we're in butt season. We're in whoa, butt comma season.
Oh my
season.
Goodness!
What was that?
Okay, I'm very serious. I'm very serious. Put your peach emojis away. That's not what I mean. That. We're in butt season. The moves the club has made to this point, right, are all good contingent on that butt. You know what I'm saying? Like they're all good contingent on what else occurs, right? I love the stylistic fit of Mikheyev, for example, but. With the team constructed as it is at the moment, I just don't see how it works. I don't see how it fits. I don't see how the marginal value added is worth the cap commitment, considering this club's playoff chances and spot in the pecking order in the Pacific. So we'll see when that butt lands, Jamie.
Oh my
That'll tell
goodness.
Us a lot.
You are just, you're unloading the clip there towards the end. It's contingent
it's
on that.
It's been a while, man.
Contingent
I've been
on
in
that
a room alone
butt.
For 5 days.
What a catchphrase from Thomas Drance. A late-breaking signing here. Final minutes of the show. Andre Burakovsky, Canucks fans are going to be seeing a lot of. He is heading to Seattle on a 5-year deal. Don't have the AAV
Yikes.
Yet there, but
barely matters.
That one doesn't really surprise me because Seattle, I don't know, like the Martin Jones signing, that's okay, sure, I guess, you know, you needed another goalie. Justin Schultz, now Andre Burakovsky. This was always the issue with Seattle for me, whereas, oh, hey, we have all this cap space, but if your plan is to spend it in free agency, that's probably not going to work out very well. And the Andre Burakovsky deal might fit into that mold for me as well.
Yeah, I don't like deals where the length of the deal, this is a general rule. It's not perfect because there's sometimes that you're a contender and you go long on term to keep the value down. Or deals like Lazar where it's below the line and I think the risk is different. But typically speaking, as a general rule of thumb, I don't like to see deals where the length is larger than I think the AAV valuation should be.
Right? Sure.
Like, I don't like Burakovsky at more than 5, so I don't like him on a 5-year deal almost regardless of what the AAV looks like.
We will see what the AAV is. We will see what else goes down around the NHL and potentially with the Vancouver Canucks as well. And as I said, hear from Patrick Alvin when he speaks to the media at 2 o'clock here on the station. Bick Nizar, Randeep Janda, they are up next. Drance and I will be back tomorrow to react to everything that happens. You've got it on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Well, and I think we're in butt season. We're in
whoa,
butt comma season.
Oh, my
season.
Goodness.
What was that?
Okay, I'm very serious. I'm very serious.